This is Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight on the show, Mark Lagenfeld, professor of psychology and general studies at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, joins us to talk about mental health issues and concerns in our community. Mark shares with us his knowledge about various aspects of mental illness. Mark has a doctorate in clinical psychology from Alliant University in Fresno, California. This episode of People of Color is produced by Elliot Sweary. All of this and more coming up on People of Color after this news. Welcome to People of Color. This is Henry Banks, and we're on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for joining us this evening. Tonight, I'm delighted to be in conversation with Mark Lagenfeld. Mark is an instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, Wisconsin. Mark is here to talk about mental illness, issues, and concerns in our community. You know, mental health, mental illness affects every single one of us. None of us are immune to this debilitating disease, this illness. Nearly 60 million Americans are affected by mental illness every year. Every year in America, 60 million people struggle with, are affected by mental illness. Mark, thank you for taking the time to be here tonight. And let's get right into this conversation. What are some of the immediate symptoms that someone who is struggling with mental health issues experience?
Basically, it is a loss in functionality. Now, the guiding rule is if a person has some level of dysfunction to the point that it's interfering with major life activities, then we say, you have some mental health issues, you need to get diagnosed, you need some assistance, some treatment. And that can be in any area. For example, someone may have problems with depression, but they're able to manage up until the time that they just can't get out of bed or can't get through the day. Same thing with anxiety. But it also deals with areas that people might not realize. For example, relationships. Mm-hmm. If you're having difficulties maintaining relationships with family, friends, romantic partners, neighbors, and that's an ongoing thing, and if it's severe enough that it's causing difficulty with major life activities, well, then that's also probably a personality disorder, you see. Mm-hmm. And then it also deals with legal entanglements. If this is your third DUI, and you've gotten arrested and your children are going to be taken away from you by the judge because of your chemical abuse, those legal entanglements now have gotten to the point where it's interfering with life activities. That's chemical dependency. It's a whole nother area. So there's broad areas, not just things like depression and anxiety, but personality disorders, chemical abuse, all those things.
Wow. So it's very deep, and as I mentioned, it affects so many of us in this country.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how mental illness crosses all demographics, races, cultures, etc.?
Sure. Because we're all human, we all have a human brain, and so we're all subject to mental health issues. And of course, it varies from person to person. However, most of the major psychological disorders do not know any boundaries regarding ethnicity or culture. There may be more anxiety disorders in cultures that are fast-paced, but as far as severe psychological disorders such as schizophrenia, other psychotic disorders, it is just a human condition, and it doesn't know any limits based on ethnicity or culture.
So, yeah, it crosses all sectors of our American society, yeah, and the world, too. So I want our listeners to know that Mark has a doctorate in psych D, right?
Mm-hmm. PsyD.
PsyD in clinical psychology from the Alliant University in Fresno, California. He teaches at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, Wisconsin. And I'm again delighted and honored that you're here in the studio to talk about these very important issues, especially depression and mental health issues and how it's affecting us every day.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So in America, one in five children and adults experience mental health issues. What can we as a society do to support our family members and friends who struggle daily with this debilitating disease?
I believe that understanding is the first thing. We need to educate ourselves and understand what's going on. If someone is suffering from, for example, a child is suffering from hyperactivity disorder, attention deficit disorder, we need to understand that and not just say, oh, well, settle down. What, you ate too much sugar today? Come on, do you have bad parents? I mean, we need to really understand what's going on and not blame the victim. Same thing with any of them. If someone is feeling depressed and they just don't feel like being around other people or going outside, you know, don't say to them, oh, shake it off. Or like I hear so often, snap out of it. Really? Is that supposed to be some form of therapy to tell someone snap out of it? We need to understand that when it comes to clinical depression, that's a biochemical imbalance in the brain. The person can't just snap out of it. Everybody has their ups and downs, and I think every human being without exception experiences the blahs now and then. That type of mild depression, yeah, you might be able to shake out of it by just going out and talking with friends and doing something active. But if it's clinical depression to the point where it's disabling, interfering with major life activities, you can't just shake it off.
Mm-hmm. Cannot just shake it off. I appreciate that. So let's start by having you define different aspects of mental illness. The first one is, what is depression? What are some of the symptoms of depression? And what does it look like to be the average person who is depressed?
Right. I would like to make a real thin distinction between mental illness and psychological disorders. Psychological disorders is more of a broad term, where mental illness is more specific to mood disorders and psychotic disorders and anxiety disorders, things like that. Psychological disorders includes developmental disorders like autism, Asperger's disorder, mental retardation. It includes late onset disorders like dementia, Alzheimer's. Psychological disorders includes chemical dependency. You don't think of chemical dependency as a mental illness because it's a psychological disorder, just like you wouldn't think of mental retardation as being a mental illness. It's a psychological disorder. So I like to use the term psychological disorder just because it's so broad instead of being so specific. To answer your question about depression and some of the symptoms, when someone is reaching the point where their depression is becoming disruptive to their life, they usually have a hard time getting out of bed. And it gets a little bit confusing because sometimes when someone's depressed, they really, really oversleep, while other times when depressed, they can't sleep. Same thing is true with diet. Sometimes when someone is clinically depressed, they just can't stop eating, while other times the same person who's clinically depressed loses their appetite. But here's the key to remember. There's a disruption in normal life activity. Whatever your normal sleep pattern is, depression will interrupt it, either too much or too little. Whatever your normal diet is, depression will interrupt it, too much or too little. It also takes away from the enjoyment that you usually have, such as movies, getting together with friends, video games. The things that used to bring you enjoyment no longer bring you enjoyment, and you just can't seem to shake it off. Those are some of the major signs of depression. and you find yourself isolating. And in severe cases where you really need to be hospitalized, you start having suicidal ideations. You start thinking that maybe you'd be better off dead. Maybe your friends and family would be better off without you. Those type of thoughts are real big warning signs.
So when somebody starts to, keep their blinds closed and, not letting the sun shine through the windows, that's a good sign right there, right?
It is a sign of depression, unless, of course, there's some other explanation, But typically, if somebody is isolating and wanting to be in the dark, drawing their blinds, not leaving their house, there might be some other explanations, such as agoraphobia, where they're afraid of public places. However, my first suspect would be depression. Mm-hmm. It would need further explanation, but yeah, it would probably be a sign of depression.
Well, this is Henry Banks. You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Professor Mark Lagenfeld. He's a very good friend of mine. He stopped in tonight to talk about depression, mental health issues, and concerns in our community. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color. Again, I'm here with professor, friend, Mark Lagenfeld. He teaches at the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College here in Superior, Wisconsin. We're talking mental health issues and concerns. Mark, you've been in this line of work for quite a long time. Can you tell our listeners how long you've been doing this work?
Over 20 years. I started working in group homes when I was still going to school as an undergrad, and then continued in that line of work throughout my master's and then into my doctoral program. And then I transitioned from working as a therapist to teaching psychology. However, there's always mental health issues going on that need to be addressed, even in the classroom. So, yeah, it's been over 20 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Mark is one of our finest professors in the area. I just
Thank
need
you.
To say that. So let's continue our conversation. What is bipolar disorder, and how is that manifested?
Bipolar disorder actually has two components. There's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. Bipolar 1 is what most people think of, which is full manic episodes and full depressive episodes. So it's more pronounced. It's very obvious. And when someone is in a full manic, they may not sleep for 3 days, and they have all these grandiose thoughts. For example, one client of mine wanted to start a orphanage on the moon for all the orphan kids, and he thought that this was reasonable. And then they go into a full depressive episode where they may not be able to get out of bed for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Now, bipolar 2 disorder is more mild, sometimes so mild that the person really doesn't get diagnosed because it doesn't quite reach that point of interfering with life functioning where they're brought to the attention of mental health providers. So they may have the blahs for a few days, and then they may have a lot of energy, and people at work like that. A lot of employers like employees who are manic. They stay late. They work overtime. They're working double shifts. Seriously, employers love it when their employees are manic. But then when the employees crash, then, the energy is gone, and then they, just can't seem to get themselves going again. So bipolar 2 disorder often goes undiagnosed because it's so mild.
I want to go back to bipolar 1. So that is the most extreme, right? So if that's the most extreme of the two, how does someone deal with that? How do you deal with this bipolar 1 and try to do that by yourself? I don't think you can.
It's very, very difficult, and particularly if you have a conflict of interest. For example, the literature that I've read said that people who are artistic tend to have very high rates of mood disorders in general, including bipolar disorder. And they do their best artistic work when they're in the manic phase. Whether they're dancers or singers or actors or poets, writers, painters, they do their best work when they're manic. And so they really resist going on medication. Mm-hmm. When they do, they say things like, well, you know, it just takes the creativity out of me. Mm-hmm. So what can they do? They have to make a decision whether they want to have their mood stabilized, perhaps at the cost of their creativity, or if they want to continue going on with their unstable mood. Tragically, if they choose to get off their meds, they may have wonderful creative potential, such as some of the comedians we know, like Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. But when they go down into the depressive state, unfortunately, he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. We see this happening with a lot of celebrities. So, the mania might be enjoyable for them at the time. But when they come down, that's when it's dangerous. It's deadly.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate. So post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Can you take some time and share with our listeners what that is and some of the symptoms of PTSD, if you would?
Sure. Post-traumatic stress disorder is when someone has experienced some extreme trauma to the point where it interferes with life functioning after 6 months. Because prior to that, it is considered normal to be traumatized.
So there is a timeline
that's
involved. Okay.
If somebody is involved in a really horrific car accident, and it's really bloody, and people in the car have died, perhaps loved ones, you know, we expect them to be traumatized. Mm-hmm. However, after about 6 months, if the nightmares continue, if the fear of a reoccurrence of the event, the traumatic event, continues, if the person remains, quote, dysfunctional for 6 months or longer, that's when a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder can be given, and then assistance can be provided. I just want to say, post-traumatic stress disorder tends to be real popularized in the media, associated with the military. However, a woman or a man who is sexually assaulted can have PTSD. Children can have PTSD from child abuse, as I mentioned earlier, car accidents that are really horrific, a natural disaster. I mean, any number of things where your life is in danger, even domestic abuse, if it's prolonged. I've heard where women who were forced into prostitution and the sex industry, human trafficking, those victims suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. So I just want to broaden people's mind that it's not only limited to military trauma.
And a lot of folks would believe that it is. And so thank you for clarifying that. That's very important. So now let's move to schizophrenia. And if you could define that, what are some of the symptoms of schizophrenia? And how is that manifested in people's lives also?
Schizophrenia is one of the most debilitating of all. And it needs to be said that schizophrenia falls under the psychotic disorders, and there's many types. They have hallucinations and delusions, cognitive entanglements such as what they call cognitive slippage, things like that. You have catatonic schizophrenia. You have disorganized schizophrenia. You have paranoid schizophrenia. There's all these different types. Personally, with all the people with schizophrenia that I deal with, paranoid schizophrenia tends to be the most debilitating. By the way, please notice my vocabulary. I always say people with.
Yes.
A psychological disorder.
Yes.
Rather than just saying schizophrenics.
Absolutely.
Because they're more than just their illness.
Yes.
So you're not going to hear me say, oh, well, a schizophrenic this or a schizophrenic that. Instead, I say people with.
And because these are our friends and our family members, too, possibly.
Yeah. Here's why paranoid schizophrenia is the most debilitating, in my opinion. Because the people who suffer from this ailment are too paranoid to even take the medication. They're paranoid and don't trust the doctors or the counselors or their family members. Mm. And so the people who are trying to help them, the help that they desperately need, they're suspicious of those individuals. And you and I both know clients that we have served that suffer from this disorder.
Yes, we do.
And it's very difficult to help them because they are suspicious of our motivations.
Right, right. And I see that all the time. So I'm here with Mark Lagenfeld. He is a professor, instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, Wisconsin. He has his doctorate in clinical psychology from Alliant University in Fresno, California. And, you know, this is a really good conversation because we as a society, as a region, need to understand the different psychological, mental health kinds of things that are affecting people every day, especially right now with what we are experiencing in this country. When you have so many opposites, people on different sides of the spectrum mistreating each other, name-calling, just all kinds of stuff that is separating our country. And I personally believe that it's mental health that's causing these things to happen. What do you think about that?
I agree. There does seem to be a polarization of people's opinions. And my belief is we're all one family. We're all interconnected. And when I say all, I mean every human on the entire globe, not just people in our community, not just our country, but over the entire globe. We're all one people, one race, the human race. So when you know about or see someone who has some type of psychological disorder, realize that's your brother or sister. And then you're not going to be so distant. You're less likely to refer to them as those people. Because it's too easy, particularly, can I take a moment to talk about the homeless? We just got through talking about schizophrenia. People who have paranoid schizophrenia often end up homeless. People with catatonic schizophrenia are the ones you see on the street corner stomping their feet and waving their arms and talking to themselves. And the public doesn't want to deal with them. They look away and say, oh, well, they're not a member of my family. They're no one that I know. And we need to change that attitude, and we need to look at those individuals as our global family.
That's right.
That person that's homeless on the street suffering from mental illness and maybe chemical dependency as well, that's a member of my global family. And then there starts to be a recognition of this interconnectedness. We've got to have that interconnectedness in our heads. Otherwise, there's too much of this separation between us and them.
And it's not about judging people. It's about coming together, like you said, because this is about being family. And we're all a part of that family. I'm here with Mark Lagenfeld. This is Henry Banks. You're on People of Color with Henry Banks on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation. I'm here with Mark Lagenfeld. He is a professor, instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Superior, Wisconsin. He has his doctorate in clinical psychology from Alliant University in Fresno, California. And, you know, this is a really good conversation because we as a society, as a region, need to understand the different psychological, mental health kinds of things that are affecting people every day, especially right now with what we are experiencing in this country. When you have so many opposites, people on different sides of the spectrum mistreating each other, name calling, just all kinds of stuff that is separating our country. And I personally believe that it's mental health that's causing these things to happen. What do you think about that?
I agree. There does seem to be a polarization of people's opinions, and my belief is we're all one family. We're all interconnected. And when I say all, I mean every human on the entire globe, not just people in our community, mm-hmm. not just our country, but over the entire globe. We're all one people, one race, the human race. So when you know about or see someone who has some type of psychological disorder, realize that's your brother or sister. And then you're not going to be so distant. You're less likely to refer to them as those people. Because it's too easy, particularly, can I take a moment to talk about the homeless? We just got through talking about schizophrenia. People who have paranoid schizophrenia often end up homeless. People with catatonic schizophrenia are the ones you see on the street corner stomping their feet and waving their arms and talking to themselves. And the public doesn't want to deal with them. They look away and say, oh, well, they're not a member of my family. They're no one that I know. And we need to change that attitude, and we need to look at those individuals as our global family.
That's right.
That person that's homeless on the street suffering from mental illness and maybe chemical dependency as well, that's a member of my global family. And then there starts to be a recognition of this interconnectedness.
Yes.
We've got to have that interconnectedness in our heads. Otherwise, there's too much of this separation between us and them.
And it's not about judging people. It's about coming together, like you said, because this is about being family. And we're all a part of that family. I'm here with Mark Lagenfeld. This is Henry Banks. You're on People of Color with Henry Banks on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation. Welcome back again here with Dr. Mark Lagenfeld from Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, background in clinical psychology, his doctorate from Alliant University in Fresno, California. We're going to continue our conversation. I would like for you to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder.
People who suffer from this disorder have a brain chemistry imbalance that causes them to fixate on whatever, some particular object or some particular activity. So they obsess about it. Obsessive compulsive disorder is often debilitating because they are not able to fully function. For example, they may stay up all night long organizing their wardrobe. I had mm-hmm. a client who used to do that. And she would actually read the labels on every single garment that she had, and even the tags, like the zipper, the tags. And she had like this ritual where she had to flip the tag so many times before moving on to the next one. And then she looked at the clock, and it's 3 a.m, and she kept telling herself, I need to get to bed. Mm. But she couldn't stop. Well, that's just one example. Mm-hmm. But whatever the person is obsessing about, they act on it compulsively, and it's almost beyond their control. That's where they need some pharmaceutical help, some medication to help balance the brain chemistry. And I do want to say that some psychological disorders really, really need pharmaceuticals, while others don't. There are some that you can deal with yourself. There are some that you can deal with counseling. There are some that you can manage on your own. Not everybody needs medication. So I don't want to have the wrong impression where the listeners think I'm toting medication. If it's something severe like obsessive compulsive disorder or schizophrenia, then they certainly need the medication. But there are other psychological disorders where a person doesn't need to be medicated.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for laying that out. That's very important. So of course, attention deficit disorder, and then ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They're synonymous in many ways, but can you separate them out and tell our listeners what one is as opposed to the other?
Most people will just refer to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They want to use a broad term that'll sort of grab everything. It's not very common for someone to just get a specific attention deficit, but it does happen. Most of the time, there's hyperactivity involved. Some of that hyperactivity, I feel, and this is just my personal opinion, it's overdiagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
Tends to be a childhood disorder, early onset disorder. And what I have experienced myself is when I was finishing my doctorate, I was doing volunteer work. They call it a field placement. And I was working in the school system at junior highs, middle schools. And the teachers would come up to me and say, could you diagnose this kid? Because he's stirring in his seat and he's disrupting the class. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to diagnose someone for your convenience, okay? If it's a psychological disorder, it's because it's causing impairment for the person, not for you. And I think too many teachers, and dare I say it, too many parents don't want to bother with a child who has a lot of energy, so they want to just put the kids on meds and just mellow them out so that they don't stir in their seat. Well, think about it biologically, evolutionarily. We came from activities. Children used to run and play. There was a time when people mostly were rural. In ancient times, when there were villages and tribes, kids ran, they played outside, and nowadays they're expected to sit quietly in their seat. I'm sorry, but that's not how our biology evolved. We need to move, and kids are supposed to be full of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, I think a lot of kids are overdiagnosed, there are some kids who really do have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and it's true. For those kids, they are suffering. They can't settle down even though they want to. They're extremely frustrated because they can't stay on task. For those kids who really do have an honest diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, then they probably do need medication. Ritalin tends to be a common one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It comes with a nasty side effect. It tends to retard the growth, physical growth of a person. I had a client once who was, I think, 13 years old. He looked like he was 10. He was small. Everything, his head, his bones, he was small because he had been on Ritalin most of his most of his childhood life. And it's just sad. But, you know, you got to weigh the pros and the cons of the side effects as opposed to not having the meds at all. So it's very frustrating. And to add to that, I think parents get blamed a lot of times for their kid not being disciplined. And the teachers, maybe even the police, might blame the parents. Well, if you disciplined your kid better, and they don't understand that the parent is doing all he or she can, and the people such as teachers and police might not understand hyperactivity disorder. So I just want to kind of give that note of support to the parents. You know, they're doing their best, and you know, they often, especially by the school system, they often get blamed for not having a structured environment at home.
So there's a disconnect right there, right?
Yeah.
So you mentioned ADHD. What about ADD? What's the difference between the two?
Attention deficit disorder is when the person is not able to focus. However, they don't have the hyperactivity. They may have distracting thoughts. They may wander. Their eyes may look around the room, but they're not experiencing the hyperactivity. This tends to be more associated with learning disabilities, where they just can't seem to focus, and they're not hyper, but they're not able to sort of pull it together and stay focused on a particular task, usually a reading task, maybe a mathematical task. But here's a caveat I'd like to add. They can be real focused if it's something that holds their interest, like a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Children with attention deficit disorder can be razor-sharp focused when it comes to playing sports or video games or something that really holds their interest.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be said.
Absolutely. So attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, mostly in children, correct?
Right, right.
Okay, I just wanted to get that clarification. Yeah. So there's another one called borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
Talk about that, please.
That deals with the personality disorders, and here is something that I want to say right up front. You cannot medicate away someone's personality. I've worked with several clients over the years who have borderline personality disorder, and they were on meds, and they were usually things like sedatives and tranquilizers. Well, I'm sorry, you're just trying to medicate away their behavior. You can't medicate someone's personality to the point where it becomes functional. I'm sorry, you can't. The most that they would do is give things like Ativan, which they call comfort meds, because it takes off the edge of the agitation. However, the disorder itself, let's just talk about the origins. Borderline personality disorder, no one knows for sure what causes it. But there's a growing theory. And the theory is that the child, that it originated in childhood, and that the child was traumatically abused and repeatedly abused, and that the person, now this is something I want everyone to understand, the person may have been abused at a pre-verbal age. Why is that different? Because every thought in your head uses language. Mm-hmm. You cannot think a cognitive thought without language. So what was going through your head before you learned language? You had images and you had feelings. So if a child is severely abused and repeatedly abused before he or she even knows a language, they don't have thoughts to conceptualize this. They just have images and they just have feelings. So now, as adults, when these feelings well up inside them, or when something reminds them of their abuse, then they don't know how to express themselves in words. They don't know how to articulate it, so they act out. And that's very typical with people with borderline personality disorder. They act out. They may throw things. They may throw themselves on the floor. One client I had stabbed a knife through the office door. One other client I had superglued her teeth shut. Just bizarre behaviors. Another therapist that I worked with said that one of her clients with borderline personality disorder camped underneath the steps of the counseling office so that when the therapist came the next day to work, the client comes crawling out from underneath the stairs. They're trying to express themselves but can't do it verbally, so they act out. And they can act out in self-mutilating ways. A classic symptom of borderline personality disorder is self-mutilation, where they do superficial cutting. They are not trying to commit suicide. Be clear about that. What they tell me they're trying to do is convert their emotional pain into physical pain. Why? Because they don't know how to deal with their emotional pain. It's too much for them. But they know how to wash a cut. They know how to put on a Band-Aid. So they literally will scratch their wrists or sometimes their ankles just enough to draw blood, because then their emotional pain becomes physical pain, something they now know how to deal with, and they clean it and they put on a Band-Aid and they say it's cathartic. They say that it's cleansing. The people who do this self-mutilation say that it releases the angst.
That's all associated with borderline.
Yes.
Wow. Personality disorder. So
yeah.
You've talked about a lot of different issues within the mental health arena. Are there other illnesses associated with mental illness that we may not know about? Maybe we've not heard about them that you could share with our listeners?
Sure. One of the most common psychological disorders, now this is not a mental illness, but it's a psychological disorder, are sexual dysfunctions. What we might call paraphilia, that's a professional term. Paraphilia means some oddity, some sort of sexual dysfunction. It involves, and I'm just going to name some of these, gender identity disorder, not a mental illness, but considered a psychological disorder. Hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which simply means the person has very little sexual interest. Hypo, like you get a hypo shot, brings you down. Hyposexual desire disorder. About 50% of people who come into sex clinics come in with that particular disorder. And by the way, as many as 43% of all females and 31% of all males at some point in their life suffer from sexual dysfunction, making this class of disorders the most prevalent of all the psychological disorders. Yet no one talks about
it. I've never heard that until now.
Because it's hush-hush. People quietly sneak into the sex clinics and quietly sneak away. But yeah, it's pretty broad. It goes on. I'll just name a few. Sexual aversion disorder. This is where the person experiences panic when they think about sex. So it's an aversion. Sexual arousal disorder. This is where the person is not able to get sexually aroused. Orgasm disorder. Premature ejaculation. And then it gets into the pathological areas where it could be a threat to our society, such as pedophilia, voyeuristic, fetishes, exhibitionism, where there's flashers. So this last grouping, including, by the way, I didn't mention sexual sadism and masochism, those things can definitely be a threat to our society when you have sex offenders out there. They, too, have a sexual disorder. So, yeah, very, very broad and very common, yet not talked about very often.
And we really need to talk more about that. Because, again, it's all a part of that getting help. And so at this point in our conversation, I would like you to take some time and offer some hope and talk about ways people can actually get some help.
Sure. The hope is nothing is permanent, okay? Feelings are not permanent. Whatever mood you are in right now as you're listening, that mood will change, perhaps in a few minutes. So if a person is feeling depressed or anxious or suicidal or whatever emotion that they're feeling, particularly if it's an unpleasant emotion, tell yourself, this is not going to last forever. It will pass. And particularly if someone is depressed, what tends to happen is people who are in the throes of depression cannot really remember happier times. And part of that is because the way the human brain works, we link up other memories that are similar to the current mood we're in. So if you're in perhaps a good mood, you remember other good times. If you're in a fearful mood, you remember other fearful times. So remember that. When you are depressed and all you can remember are other sad memories, it's because that's the way the brain works. You're only able to remember things that are linked up to the current mood you are in. When you wait and you are in a better mood, a more pleasant mood, then those happier memories will come back. And so you don't have to go on thinking that your life is so miserable. So that's what I would like to say. Things are non-permanent. And as far as getting help, if you are at the point where it's interfering with life functioning, then call a helpline, call a mental health services, call your physician. If you don't have a physician, call a helpline. You can look in the phone book. You can look online. But I just want to make it clear, we all have our ups and downs, And just because you're having a down day doesn't mean that you're having a down life. I say it one more time. The point that is the tipping point is when it interferes with life functioning. If you're not able to go to work or go to school, if you're not able to maintain relationships, if you're having problems with the law repeatedly, and it's interfering with life functioning, that is the point that you need to seek help.
Mm-hmm. I want to give a shout out to an organization that's based here. They do have a location here in Douglas County. It's called the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Douglas County, Wisconsin. And they do have a peer support group. They have a family support group. I'll just give you a quick website that you can go to. That is NAMIWisconsin.org. Also, you can go to NAMIDuluthArea.com. That's, again, NAMIWisconsin.org or NAMIDuluthArea.com for more information. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Professor Lagenfeld, is there anything else you want to leave with our listeners as we close the show today?
Yes, actually, if we could turn back time to the Middle Ages, I just want to mention that mental health has often been associated with blaming the victim. And I think that it still is prevalent today. In ancient times, colonial times, we put people who were mentally ill to death. We thought that they were demon-possessed. In ancient England, in the 17th century, people were thrown into cages, and the public paid admission to come in and see the crazy people locked up. Even people who had epilepsy and would have seizures, they were thought to be demon-possessed. And so throughout human history, we have blamed the victim. We see someone who has some kind of psychological disorder, particularly if it's severe like schizophrenia, and we think, oh, they're evil, they're dangerous, God is punishing them. Well, unfortunately, not only was that ancient thinking, but we have a lot of that thinking yet today, where we see somebody suffering from mental illness, including chemical dependency, and we blame the victim. Oh, well, it's your own fault. You're morally weak. It's a character flaw. We need to stop blaming the victim. If someone has some kind of psychological disorder, they need to address it. We can help. And we need to stop blaming the victim. It's not their fault. They need our understanding, not our shame, not our blame.
Professor Lagenfeld, thank you again for taking time to be with us on People of Color today. Mark Lagenfeld, professor, instructor at the WITC campus in Superior. That's the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College on the Superior side of Wisconsin here. It's an honor to have you come in and share with us. This is a very important topic.
Yes.
It's a very important topic because, again, we're going through some stuff in our country, in our society, and we need to help and support each other. You know, I hope you come back.
Thank you.
You don't need an invitation. You're always welcome here because we're going to be talking about this for quite some time. This is People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Henry Banks. Have a great evening and a great weekend.